This episode of the Better Every Shift podcast is sponsored by The Fire Store. Learn more about getting the gear you need at prices you can afford by visiting thefirestore.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Better Every Shift podcast. My name is Aaron Zamzo. I'm a fire lieutenant. I'm also a writer contributor to FR1, and I'm not alone, of course. Thank God for that. Someone's got to kind of pull the reins on this podcast. With me, as always, is the commander, Janelle Fasquette. She is the editor-in-chief of Fire Rescue 1. Janelle, how are we doing today?
I am doing fantastic. How are you, Aaron?
I'm great. Our guest, Stephanie White, who's a firefighter paramedic, we're like kindred souls here. We're telling stories behind the scenes. She's also an advocate for a lot of women's health issues, firefighter health issues, safety issues. She's a personal trainer. She's a mental health peer. She's a podcast host. She's an author. Welcome to the program, Stephanie White. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Aaron?
I'm good. There's a lot that you're involved with, but you know, with all the different things you're doing, what's your favorite thing right now? What's your favorite project you're working on?
Favorite project right now would have to be, we're building out a state peer team for Virginia State. So that's been pretty neat to see how different departments do different things, different needs throughout the state. Virginia is a really large state, so you have the area right outside of DC, and then you have areas that border Tennessee and Kentucky. So just getting to see all the different atmospheres from southern to northern and different mental health issues within each department and section has been pretty cool. Very, very eye-opening, big learning project.
So I know you're passionate about mental health. You're passionate about women's health. You and I actually met last year at a great conference about mental health, the Brothers Helping Brothers Conference. In Beaver Creek, Ohio. Was it wonderful
the
Beaver Creek?
Beautiful Ohio? Or the wonderful? The exotic. It was the exotic.
Exotic Beaver Creek, Ohio. And, you know, it was after the conference. I was hanging out with the Crackle guys. We were maybe getting in a little bit of trouble. And you came in and you fit right in with us. But you told this amazing story about your hair color. And I think this just is going to lead to a lot of great conversations. But I love this story. Do you remember what it was? And could you retell it?
I don't remember the exact, was it the porcelain skinned, redheaded, was it that insult or was it just the premise of the hair color?
It's the hair color story. Like, I think you had dark hair at the time and we were asking why you changed your hair color.
So the natural hair color is red and I've dyed it off and on for years to black because when it gets to be the season of the summertime when people start doing a lot of PCP, something about the red hair causes a very, very different reaction. And so the entertainment and violence level gets a little higher with the red hair versus with the dark hair. People normally chill out. It's a great source of entertainment for my shift. I actually have a mug that says that porcelain skinned, redheaded, and an edited out word because that's what one patient who used to hit too many substances used to call me whenever she'd see me coming towards her. So it's it's a safety and an entertainment thing all in once.
But you had data. You had data to this. I think you were saying, right, like one night it was six people and it was right after I switched my hair color. I mean, you remember that specific part?
Yeah, the guys didn't believe me. When I got to the firehouse in 2018, when I got to that assignment, I had dark hair. And they asked me why, and I told them, and they didn't believe me. So I think like a month or two later, I went and stripped the hair color out. And within like a month, they were begging me to put it back to black. It just was, you could see a difference in how people on substances react. It's quite humorous.
Now, have you ever heard of a story like, you know, we had talked behind the scenes off. I'm like, okay, there's a great example of being a male. Like I would never think of that or correlate that, right? Like, have you ever heard that kind of a thing come from a man at all on the job?
No, but there also aren't a ton of redheads on the job. So I think that also helps a little. It's not just a male thing. You don't see too many gingers. We it's a job that involves being in the sun, so we probably shy away from it naturally a little. Maybe if we go to Boston, we'll find a bunch of them, but.
Yeah. Well, just a crazy story. And again, it goes back to like, you know, there are some things that I think the men in the fire service need to start understanding a little bit more. And you've been a very good advocate for like just women's point of view, women's health. You know, what's the biggest kind of thing you wish everybody would start to understand a little bit better about just women's health and women's issues in the fire service?
I think the biggest thing is that women's health, specifically reproductive health, which is the big thing I teach on, it affects all of us, right? Because what if one day you marry a firefighter or your sister becomes a firefighter, or a close friend, whatever. It isn't just a women's issue. Because along that same vein, making sure our moms can safely carry a pregnancy and are safe throughout that pregnancy and have good options affects crew integrity and crew health, making sure that moms come back in shape and ready to do the job because they've been properly screened for any pregnancy injuries. That affects everybody on the line, right? If you've got no core because OBs are not trained to treat firefighters. So they think, well, I'm going to release this person to work and they're going to go sit behind a desk. They don't check to make sure your abs haven't been torn open, which is incredibly, common in women, right?
Yep.
If I've got no abs protecting my spine, how long is my career going to last? So stuff like that, I think we really look at it as, well, that affects that mom and that space and that time. And no, we need to look at it all as it really affects the team in so many different ways with mental health and physical health.
Yeah. And of course there's a support thing too, right? Like you start to lose a little bit of faith in your organization if you're constantly having to go to bat for yourself in these cases, correct?
You do, because women have been popping out babies for a really long time, right? So you would think that when you decided to start hiring women, you would have thought that through, right? We've got a plan for that. Women have been doing this for forever. And it's a little insulting because you can almost feel a little degraded. Like I'm having to ask for the ability to just safely do what thousands of generations of women before me have done. I mean, this isn't me asking for special treatment. This is me asking to start a family. That shouldn't have to be an ask. That can absolutely affect the morale of a family. Especially if you're somebody married to that female firefighter. If the dudes are going to start getting ticked off at the county, city, whatever as well, right? That's my family you're not treating correctly.
Yeah, and there's so much of it that I think you just hit right there. One, when there's a cesarean birth, you cut through all the abdominals, right? Everything from transverse abdominis to all the stabilizing muscles. Not to get too technical, you need all those things in order to stabilize most movements on the fire ground, off the fire ground, getting into the truck, carrying gear. And that recovery is going to take longer, right? And the other thing that we don't know or we don't take into account is the elasticity in joints. So I think it's progesterone is also produced post-pregnancy or throughout the pregnancy and post-pregnancy, which means the stability in the ankle and the knee and the hips is not back to where it should be in order to carry all the weight of the pack, weight of the gear. And why we haven't figured that out yet from a policy standpoint, I think, you know, there's quite a few things we could go down, but I'm sure I'm not trying to answer your question for you, but like, how do we get more people to understand that, especially in leadership? And I think that's where you've been a really good advocate, but who's doing it right and who's not got it yet?
I don't think anybody's doing it right because there's still issues everywhere. A friend of mine once said, every time a woman in the fire service gets pregnant, it's like the first time a woman has ever gotten pregnant, because I feel like every woman I know has dealt with some sort of issue, but the answer is just conversations and awareness, right? Talking about abs again. I didn't know until my second kid just how many women, and I'm not even talking C-section, your abs get ripped open when you are carrying this big freaking basketball inside your belly. I went back to work 6 weeks postpartum and I didn't realize you could have put a softball through my abs. And finally, when I started having some issues with strength, I mean, I felt like I had nothing there physically in my core. I went and saw a physical therapist and she literally stuck her fist into my intestines through my abs. Crazy. So awareness, teaching your OHC doctors, teaching your firefighters, teaching your people who make light duty assignments, all these things. It's simply conversations and awareness and access to educational material. I don't think anybody is out to screw female firefighters, families, anything like that. I just think they don't know. And that comes through having strong policies, making sure your union's aware of it, or whatever your volunteer organization is, making sure they know the appropriate moves of how long a female should stay on the line and when is it appropriate for a female to come back to the line.
Yeah, it's just kind of mind-boggling because it's like, we're not reinventing the wheel here. It's like, we know, you know, having good policies and then we can replicate them at different departments. I think that's where I'm just stuck. It's like, I love how you said that. It's like the first time someone's ever had a baby. Like, we've been doing this for a long time. So how do we not have these policies in place? Wouldn't that be just such a simple, at least starting point?
I think anything with health and the fire service, and I don't understand it why, is a struggle when it comes to the concept of firefighters needing time off. And it, to me, that is mind-boggling. That is an issue with the fire service overall, not making physical investments in their firefighters' health. You look at how many firefighters are fighting cancer and they're having to work overtime. They're being held, they're being recalled. All these things where if I'm fighting a disease that can take my life, I would like to be getting 10 hours of sleep every day. I would like to be having optimal nutrition. I want every fighting chance to freaking live if something's going to take my life. So it's a greater conversation of health policies overall of why are we doing some of the dumb things that we do? Why are we not treating our firefighters as if we care about how they turn out after retirement? We kind of view them as this, listen, I just need to get 10 to 15 years out of you, however long the national average is. So I'm just going to treat you this certain way and get as much as I can out of you. Sure, I'll put investments into your mental energy, right? Into leadership and stuff like that. But for some reason, health is just this elusive thing that we don't put appropriate energy into. And we're starting to see departments do that. With the UDS scans and other scans that they're doing to check for cancer, we're starting to be more proactive. And that just bleeds over into reproductive health. And it's something we just really started talking about nationally in 2019. So it's still the baby on the block, all puns intended, when it comes to health conversations. See what I did there?
I see what you did there. That. Yeah. Yep. You're a talented host yourself. I'm taking notes. That's a good little segue into, you know, I know you're working with some organizations that are, you know, geared towards just making the fire service more aware. Do you have some data, some stats? Give me some facts that really will help kind of spur conversations to people when they're listening to this.
We are at high rates of miscarriage. Everybody knows Dr. Sarah Jenke. She has been the godmother of reproductive health in the fire service. And they're finding statistics of almost up to a quarter or half of women, depending on what report you look at, miscarry in the fire service, which is absolutely obscene to think about compared to, I think it's about 7%. I haven't checked the numbers for the past year, but I believe it's 7% of the normal population. We are twice to three times that amount, which is absolutely heartbreaking if you think about it, because Aaron, you're a lieutenant. Would you be surprised to find out that a lot of women start to miscarry on the job? I know I did twice and had to go home. I know other people that have had multiple miscarriages and a lot of them started on the job. Do you think a woman would be comfortable coming to you and telling you why, or just saying, hey, I got to go, I'm on sick leave? And you might not even know when that woman comes back. So you have a female firefighter who's at high risk for miscarrying. You probably don't know she's pregnant yet because it's within that maybe 4 to 9 week time schedule where she's not ready to tell anybody. What's her mental health going to be like? What's her physical health going to be like? Her hormonal health, just everything. So when it comes to the statistics of that, it's pretty bleak. Hilariously, it's not talked about that often, which you would think men would be more concerned about it, but male reproductive health is the new hot topic, especially with PFAS. not trying to stay away from the crass area of it all, but sperm health, absolutely abysmal in males. We haven't done any studies yet in the US that have been published, but they've done Danish studies, and those are absolutely terrifying to look at, specifically because of heat, lack of sleep. If you look at PFAS studies in male reproductive health, those are suddenly starting to line up with a lot of the issues that we're seeing in both male and female reproductive health. The rate of carcinogens in breast milk is an issue as well. There should be a newer white paper coming out on that, so I don't want to quote anything, but that is really, really terrifying. And they haven't even done any kind of PFAS study on that either, just carcinogens. So this is all stuff that's kind of buried until you go digging for it when you get pregnant. But by then it's a little bit too late, right? You want to have been avoiding this stuff and thinking about this stuff before you get pregnant.
Yeah. The other side with men too, you know, low testosterone is a huge, I think, issue with that. And I think also, you know, because of the stress, going back to the female health, you know, and the cortisol levels that we have, the inflammation that we have because of our environments, right? That, as you said, that's been shown to, you know, transfer to the reproductive health on both sides, men and women. And, but why is there this closed door? I mean, is it because it's not a simple fix?
It's not. Let's say I want to have a kid and both me and my partner are completely healthy, but they're on shift, I'm on shift, I don't sleep for 24 hours. Well, my hormones are now already completely screwed up. Let's say they're screwed up probably for the month, right? It takes about 10, 14 days for your hormones to recover. Ovulation cycle, all of that. Well, then let's say I have a good month, but my partner doesn't sleep for that tour. Even if you are completely healthy and not exposed to all these things, just our schedule alone makes it harder for us to start families. So I think it's a scary conversation to have because it's in some ways a little hopeless because nobody wants to talk about changing shifts. Nobody wants to talk about the money that goes into that. And also firefighters, we don't want to lose our 24-hour shift. I don't want to go to a 12-hour shift. So it's a weird conversation to have because you can almost be shooting yourself in the foot having it in many ways.
Yeah.
There's so many different layers to the conversation, the schedule, the actual health, the physical health, the mental health. And then I just wanted to circle back real quick to something that you said about, you know, if women are miscarrying on the job, also, what does that look like when they get pregnant again from the mental health side of it? There's going to be a fear of going back to work. And can you have these open conversations with your supervisors? And like you said, obviously there's the time period where typically we're not talking about these things openly, right? But then after that, once people know you're pregnant, there's like that mental, there's the internal struggle and fear. And then are you comfortable talking about that with the people around you? It just feels like there's a lot of different layers involved. And a lot of it comes back to just trust and open communication.
I think I've told this story before on another podcast or in an article, but I had two back-to-back miscarriages. And one of them was much later. It was in the second trimester. And just to see the difference in how the men in my battalion treated me, not in a bad way, but I think by the time I got successfully pregnant with my second son, I think they were more afraid for me than I was afraid for me. So they were going out of their way to lift things and to do things. And with my first son, I was 6 months pregnant and in a pretty good first two fire. And just to see how concerned so many of them were, it is a conversation that needs to be had because your mental health isn't just affected. If you have a close-knit battalion or close-knit firehouse, those guys are all in protective mode, right? Those guys and gals. So that's a whole other avenue.
Hey, let's have that conversation. I'm a new lieutenant and you're on my crew. You're just pregnant, you know, newly pregnant. I mean, what kind of things do you want me to know and understand and what should I know? And, you know, from a standpoint of being, you know, in a leadership position.
I think having a conversation about physical limitations is a big thing in terms of, I would probably say, hey, Lou, I right now can do everything that I have to do. When I no longer can't, I will leave the line. So I don't need you guys worrying about me and stepping in and potentially anybody getting hurt, because we all have assigned roles. We all have things we need to get done. And if you're focusing on my job, that means a ball is getting dropped somewhere. So I think having that conversation of, I will leave when I can't physically do this job. Please trust me. Please trust my capabilities. Conversely, you might have to look at somebody and say, hey, Stephanie, I notice you've been guarding your belly or doing this or doing that. Can we talk about when it is, what's the benchmark you'd like to meet before you leave the field? Because you can't force somebody out of the field, but it might be if you kind of kindly have to prod them a little bit that we might be there. We might have reached that point. It's an awkward conversation to have, but it's
right.
It's only awkward because we've stigmatized it as awkward.
Do you see that with women who are pushing themselves too far because they don't want to say, hey, it's that time, I've got to back off, leave the line?
Oh, I should not have been in a house fire 6 months pregnant. There's no way in hell that I would ever do that again. Pardon the Irish language. But it was, for me being 27 at the time, I think I kind of wanted to prove, oh, I can do this. And looking back, it was an incredibly stupid thing to do. So yeah, I think women, for various reasons, kind of, they don't want people to look at them and say, oh, you just wanted to go on light duty, or, oh, see, women aren't physically capable after all. There's always going to be a woman out there who's going to have some sort of issue that they have to kind of battle out with themselves. And it might not be because of outside voices. It might just be their own voice that's causing them to potentially make an unwise decision. I think with all the new science that's come out, I think women are doing a much better job of standing up and saying, I'm going to leave now because of PFAS, COVID, all these different things that have come about within the past 4 years.
Leave meaning going to off the line.
Correct. Light duty assignment.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's partially is that we got to start having these conversations that we maybe didn't have before. We have to become a little more humanized instead of, you know, just robots and this is the way we've always done it, you know. And I think another part of that too, you had mentioned, I know with my department and something that I was kind of brought to my attention a couple of years ago was we do a skills test, do a skills assessment every 2 years. And I've noticed that if a female, let's say, just struggles a little bit with a ladder, it could be windy. It could be, you know what, rope got, you know, the rope got in the wrong spot, or, you know, took a bad step. It happens. If it happens to a female, there's 5-10 people saying, oh, it's because it, you know, they can't handle that ladder. But if someone else, if it's me, it's like, oh, you know, Zam tripped. And I think that goes beyond just that test. I think it goes beyond a lot of conversations, right? And so let's give me some guidance on that. How do we stop that type of banter? How do we start to open up our eyes a little bit to being a little more equal that way?
I think that's something that is going to die out with the next generation. Already seeing the new 20-year-old and 20 to 25-year-old kids that are coming in, they're a lot more used to the concept of females in the fire service. Because if you look back on it, the first career female firefighter was either 1974, or it might have been 1984, between those
74.
Two, 74 in Arlington, Virginia. And look at that in the grand scale of things. Females in the fire service aren't that old. And it wasn't really until I think the 90s that you started to have maybe two in recruit school versus one. So these conversations are probably just getting started within the past 5 to 6 years. I've been in the fire service since 2003, and I'm only recently starting to hear people step up and say them. So they're going to start to go away through recent conversations, but also this newer generation, it's nothing to have, you know, 3-4 females in your recruit school versus that one female being the big shocking thing. So attrition will take care of that. But in terms of finding relief for the females, maybe in smaller departments or departments where they're still hiring their first female, It's conversations. It's just, pardon the Irish again, don't be a jackass. It's really the conversation of, right. I'm not going to say this is somebody's mother, daughter, sister, whatever. I'm going to say this is the person that your life today depends on. So maybe we make sure that we treat them in a way that their mental health is going to be completely shored up going through that door. Why would we not build them up when our life relies on them? If somebody's struggling with a ladder, why am I not going over there and teaching them a better way to throw that ladder? My exactly. life depends on them.
Yeah.
Why would
we all mess the stuff up. Just stop being so damn critical. Like you said, build them up then. You know, find ways to make them better. I think that's what this program is about, isn't it? Janelle, Commander, isn't that what the name of this podcast
Correct.
Is? Right? Better every shift.
Our favorite snack is to eat our own, right? I mean. Yeah.
It was, but gosh darn it, we're changing that with programs like today and with things that you're doing. And, and we could go on and on. And I appreciate having these conversations. Hopefully someone's listened to this go and, yeah, maybe it's time for me to look in the mirror and start having a difficult conversation, or at least trying to, start that conversation. But I want to change it a little bit. I want to get a little more uplifting because you are full of comedy. You're full of great stories too. Like you do a very good job of bringing laughter in the firehouse. And, you know, where I think a lot of people start to think about, do I have to tiptoe? I mean, you're about crew camaraderie. You're about, you know, joking and joshing and I imagine you're probably one of the instigators in a lot of those things. So, you know, tell me one of those stories if you haven't.
So I will tell you actually instead, you want to talk about laughter in the firehouse. I will tell you what my shift does to bond together every day. And that is to somehow make as many cartoons as possible about me. So yesterday was a running tally where any word that could have ism added on to the end, they had a running tally of all the faults about me, and they just added ism at the end. Somehow cannibalism ended up is something that I got pinged for a lot during the day. And it just, by the end of the day, the board was completely full of some pretty made up, interesting life things that I was apparently guilty of, but just every day they draw a different cartoon or have a different, running tally of maybe things I've misspelled or missaid, which happens a lot, especially at 2 a.m. So that's their way of crew bonding that always goes awry for me, always, because every time I try to get out of it or stand up for myself, it just ends up as a whole different cartoon. So
yeah, put your foot in your mouth a little bit.
Maybe every now and then. So
part of it ever.
The family thing, right? We're a dysfunctional family.
Yeah, if you want to talk about crew bonding and laughter, apparently me being the butt of every joke is the crew bonding and laughter in my firehouse. And that always goes awry.
Well, what if you're not there?
They FaceTime me or they call me. True story.
The Fire Store, equipping protectors with passion. Every decision we make as a company is about you, our customer. We wouldn't be where we are today without you. And we don't take that lightly. We understand that having the right gear can mean the difference between life and death. Our goal is to get you the gear you need, when you need it, at prices you can afford. Visit us at thefirestore.com for everything but the truck, and shop our family of brands, including Streamlight, MSA, Lion, Fleer, and more. Now let's get back to the show.
So FDIC is coming up, and you're speaking at FDIC on a very related topic. Your session is called Kitchen Table Accountability, Using Laughter to Handle Conflict. So it sounds like you've got it pretty down with your crew. Could you tell us a little bit about where that idea came from to speak on at FDIC?
My crew naturally was the inspiration for this class, complete with pictures and everything throughout the presentation. I have been throughout my career in firehouses or worked over time where people were just terrified of laughter. And it always showed on the call. There was always poor crew communication and continuity. And I have been so lucky in that the houses I've been assigned to for long chunks of time, I mean, we all laughed. Nothing was off the table. And if it was off the table, somebody started to to maybe be uncomfortable, they instantly picked up on it and communicated with it, which was something that's very key that we don't talk about. I think as a fire service, we've become so liability heavy. We're talking about that in other categories before we hit the record button. And because of that, we just came through and kind of said, hey, nobody tell any jokes. There's so many things that people are going to be offended by these days. And that was just the worst move that you could have ever done to the fire service, because you took away people's bonding capabilities. Because how do we bond? We really bond through dark humor. And that's also how we mentally recuperate. So there was a study done in 2017, federal EEOC. We've all done our EEO training every, what is it, year or 2 years. We've all had to do it. And there was a study that came through that nobody talks about where they said, oops, maybe that was the wrong thing to do. That was the wrong thing for us to recommend. Organizations should be teaching people how to apologize at the lowest level possible and have conversations. And so the class is really based on, A, to educate firefighters themselves, but it's structured so that you can just take the whole darn thing home with you, show it to your leadership and say, hey, we're actually legally protected. This is a federal recommendation that we be allowed to apologize to each other and to have conversations with each other if something goes wrong. So often you hear a crew surprised because somebody was offended, and instead of talking to everybody and saying, hey, I kind of don't like where this is going, can we not have that conversation? They run straight to IA or whoever, and then everybody's in trouble, but nobody got the common courtesy of a conversation. And we can't be living like that way in a firehouse, because when we roll out that door, when we're going to a fire or a CPR, or even just holding grandma's hand, we all need to be performing at peak performance. And that comes through being bonded and being comfortable around each other. And if I'm comfortable around you, I'm able to look at you and say, knock it off, don't be a knucklehead, right? So why aren't we allowing our people to do that? Not just the laughter portion, but the I should be allowed to apologize portion. I can't imagine being in a marriage or being around my parents or siblings or anything where I was told you cannot make a mistake or you cannot say anything that offends any of your family members, significant others. Can you imagine that relationship? But yet we're putting that on our firefighters.
Well, it's like what we were talking about with the designated adult, right? Like someone's got to be the designated adult in the room, step up and just say, hey, man, like you got to rein it in. But that doesn't necessarily have to equate to going straight to HR, right? So like and blowing it up into something really big. I think that's the tricky thing is like, where do you find, how do you identify the line where something does cross the line and become a problem?
So that's part of the conversation as well, is kitchen table accountability, policing your own kitchen table, because I think we're pretty good at reading people, right? We see people on their worst day possible. We see people lying to us. We see people high as a kite, drunk. We really have become experts at human behavior. So we can tell when somebody at the kitchen table is probably uncomfortable. And if we see somebody repeatedly being uncomfortable and maybe one to two people consistently causing that discomfort, well, then it's our job to maybe pull the aggressor aside and say, hey, you're making so-and-so uncomfortable. And then if they keep doing it, well, maybe that then needs to be a shift conversation of, do you mind knocking it off before you get us all carted off to IA? And also, by the way, you're being a jerk as well. I think we know where the line is. I think we can see where the line is. I think we can see it on people's faces. We know where there's some pretty hard lines that we cannot cross, right? So if somebody crosses that, we automatically all as a shift get to say, no, unacceptable, and then take the appropriate actions, whether it be, okay, was that an accidental screw up and we can retrain this right here and now and have a conversation, or do we need to boot it up the chain? But we're smart individuals. We can figure that out. Give us the room to figure it out in-house if it's fixable before you drag it out, maybe dismember a shift, whatever it be, and leave a situation worse than it had to be. And also, you're teaching your firefighters to have not only personal accountability, but conflict resolution. Why wouldn't you want us to have that skill?
Well, I think you're talking about one thing. It's called being human, right? From women's health issues to men's health issues, it starts with a communication. When you talk about building, you know, brotherhood, sisterhood, pride, I think it starts with just having genuine communication, which is really something I think COVID hurt us with. Like, how many times we see it, you know, I've been at a firehouse table and I've looked and everybody's on their cell phone. And one of the things one of the best experiences I've had in leadership was one night I said, hey, can everybody just put your phones down for like 5 minutes? And that turned into 2.5 hours of people just talking to each other without the TV on, without having a phone go off, without, right? Like, it was at one point I kind of just stepped back and went, holy cow. You know, do you think, I mean, we need to do that more. Does your crew have like a no phone rule at one point?
We don't have a no phone rule. We have Brain Power Hour, starts at 7 o'clock. Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy.
Oh yeah.
Guaranteed at least 5 people yelling at the TV all at once. And I think we're having too much fun to, you know, someone might pick up their phone here and there, but it's not that mass quiet of when you walk into a room and everybody's on their phone. So we do that. We'll do movie nights. And there's nobody has to write the rule. We've created an environment where everybody's allowed to make a mistake, to apologize, and to be human. So we kind of like each other and want to hang out with each other. At least that's what they claim that. I mean, hopefully.
Well, they probably text you something different, but that's all part of the culture, you know? Right.
True.
But that way, you know, you're like, hey, I missed. Because they texted you a picture of you being a witch or whatever. Yes, I know, I missed. They really missed it, right? Like,
yeah, there is a large witch doll that they bring out at Halloween.
That was my next question. Like, what's the one that they're like, oh, I know this will get her. What's the one text you get?
Somehow on some call, I got called the Wicked Witch. So that's just been their new mascot. So anything to do with that. That's their favorite.
So I get
at Halloween and Christmas. I'll get all kinds.
Oh, not just and randomly, I suppose. Every once in a while, someone will probably see one.
This is true. Yes.
Yeah, we had Ben Vernon on the program. Wonderful individual. He was there with us at Brothers on Brothers, and his is Olaf. Like, well, Olaf with a knife in his back is really what his crew will text him, and you know, and he it's
a savage.
It is, but he embraces it. I sent him an Olaf mug. He's like, dude, you're the best. You know, there is that dark humor, like you said, that we can all relate to that does bond us in a way. My crew, when I'm out presenting, because I'm kind of the health and fitness guy, I'll get pictures of malts and burgers and fries and pizza and all the bad foods that they don't. They're like, Zammy's gone, malt and burger day, you know? And so I get those. And of course, there's other things that are accommodating those malts and burgers, but we won't talk about that on the program. It is the dark humor, but we need to embrace it a little bit, like you're talking about, right? Because that's good for our mental health. And you were talking about research on that, correct?
Just the bonding that laughter creates, the chemical release that it creates. Just, you can hop online and go find 100 different studies, and it doesn't even... I started off by looking at maybe the military and bonding and stuff like that, but then just I realized, no, basic laughter studies. Like, why do we even need to make it complicated? Just go look up any kind of study on laughter and bonding, and it's all scientifically there. The way it brings our cortisol way down, it creates bonding, it helps us cope. It's all scientifically there. It's the simplest, cheapest thing that we can give our firefighters. Why would we outlaw it?
What's your go-to joke?
I actually, I'm the worst joke teller on my crew, which is horrible. My kids remind me of that daily. I'm not good at telling jokes, which ends up backfiring because I'll attempt to tell a joke and I'll tell it wrong. And then that will go on the whiteboard as a cartoon, most likely. So I'm not the joke. Yeah.
You're not the one, which is why you're probably the center of like a lot of the other jokes. Because of
I'm the butt of all the jokes.
The butt of all your jokes. Yeah. I have one for you.
So
I have one for you. You can, this is the new one you can tell your crew. Okay. You could talk about your uncle who used to work in a fire hydrant company or fire hydrant plant, but he had to quit because he couldn't park anywhere near the place. There you go. Dad joke 101.
I'll be telling that one tonight.
All right. You could replay it. You could text me later and be like, hey, what was that again? I messed it up. Something about your uncle's hydrant that wouldn't allow him to park or something. Yeah, I got it. But those jokes are priceless. The bonding is even more important for us. The conversations that we need to have all relate back to being better health, better bonding, better spirits. What else do we need to start working on? Obviously, we need to be more aware, I think, of reproductive health, women's health issues, obviously, as well. There are some men's health issues in there that we don't want to address. Like we talked about low testosterone. We talked about, hormone imbalances with the men as well. What else do you really see that we need to really address?
One last thing about that laughter thing, because I just thought of it, and it is something important. When you walk into a shift that's quiet and they don't communicate and they don't laugh, when I'm having a quiet day, you're not going to tell because we're already all buried in our cell phones and we're not talking. When you have a loud and robust shift, that quiet person who's struggling is suddenly going to stand out like a sore thumb. And you're going to be able to say, hey, it's time to go have a tough conversation with somebody, lend an ear, whatever it is. So another important part of that equation. In terms of what we're doing wrong that we can work on better, how long is this show?
As long as you want. We'll talk all day.
We're always going to have, we're human beings, right? We're human beings with egos and type A personalities. So there's always going to be a laundry list of issues in the department. Something Janelle and I actually, we talked about a little mini article I wrote last year. And I was telling a story about a situation between a male and female, and this can happen between any genders. It just happened to be male and female was how it played out, where that person said, hey, it was a supervisor. This person never comes to me for my opinion. They never sit down and drink coffee with me. And they really labeled them as off-putting as a result. And that really blew my mind. And I think something we really need to focus on is the bias that we pick up in firehouses just because someone doesn't do something that we prefer. And that's something that's always been in firehouses, whether it be, hey, didn't do a heavy hookup on that. I prefer a heavy hookup. That's cool. That's his rig that he's driving today. And while the heavy hookup might be wise, you are now talking to him like he ran over a basket full of kittens. Why are we having these discussions in these ways for things that are just my preference or I would do it that way? And that's another, eating our own has been something I've recently just, I don't know if we want to say become bitter about, become obsessed with, become annoyed with, whatever, but that's been the rant of the month is the way we become biased towards people for the dumbest little things in the fire service is something we got to knock that out. It's never going to do any good. And we're still training the next generation to eat their own. And that is something I am seeing carried over to the new young kids, which is something I would love to see die off. It's just the criticism just because it isn't how I would have done it, or it isn't what I would have said, or it isn't how I would have handled it. That's cool.
Isn't that like all just caught up in ego? And
it is.
What do you, Bruno, say? Ego eats brains, you know?
Ego eats brains.
Well, I think too, being in more of a leadership role, I think that's one of the biggest things leaders need to understand, that because it didn't necessarily happen the exact way they wanted, it still got the job done. We have to accept that, right? Like you said, just because they didn't, you know, stack the tip the way that they wanted to, or stack the hose line exact way that they wanted to, doesn't make it wrong. And, you know, there's 150,000 ways to, you know, pull a fire hose and to put up a ladder, and, you know, everybody's got their own little techniques. Do it safely, do it efficiently, but, you know, yeah, it's not necessarily wrong. And you're right. Sometimes more senior people will go, oh, that's wrong. Well, wait a minute. You got, It's up there. It's safe. It was quick, right? Like, why is that? You know, it's like Janelle writing the script for this. That was the biggest lesson that she probably learned right away, is her script's not the same as my script, but she's learned to work very well with it. We need to be aware of it, first of all, and then make that change, right? Like, are there times where you find that you're kind of throwing it back at some of your leaders in a way? And if, what works efficiently to do that? So let's say, you know, you and I are lieutenants, and you're doing yours one way, and I'm kind of coming down on you. Like, what do you say to me? How do you, like, let's have that conversation. Start that.
So I was amazingly lucky in that I had a really, really strong mentor for a couple of years. He's still my mentor, but the great Rocco Alvero. And man, I used to kick in his office door. It was already open because he always had it open. I just, you know, need to kick it for extra effect, with a cup of coffee and just a rant, probably once a day, about something that had annoyed me and I was mad at somebody. And he would listen. He would listen. He would digest it. And he would say, well, Steph, what are you going to do to fix it? And then, what are you going to do to help them grow? Do you need to grow? What do you need to change? And I really learned to look at problems from that direction of, don't be an Irish Italian redhead for 5 seconds. How are you going to make this a sustainable change? Not just go and nail somebody's ass to the wall, because that is what we all love to do in the fire service, self included. Had four brothers growing up, so that is one of my favorite life things to do. But where are you going to create that lasting change, and how you have that conversation of, hey, walk with me, talk with me. What's your reasoning? Why are we doing it this way? Okay, where do we go from there with that conversation? But it's, you have to completely abandon the ego when you have conversations with other people, and have the intention, where's the longevity, right? Because you and I are going to retire from the fire service. Issues are always going to remain. So let's solve a problem on a micro level here for all to see. Where does that fit into the longevity of the fire service? Why are we even having this conversation? What's the intent? What's the goal?
That Rocco, he's a pretty smart guy, isn't he?
He is. And then he abandoned us all.
Wow. He had a different role. Now he's playing, it's almost like a Gandhi / Yoda kind of approach. And I love how you summarize that. You're like, is this about you? Is this about, what are you going to do about it? You know, just the questions that make you stop, take a breath, and evaluate the totality of the situation. Correct. It's just that kind of neutralizing questions can do that. And so that's a very priceless lesson. So if anybody's listening to us here, just rewind a little bit and listen to Stephanie say that again.
I have to tell the audience something. Janelle has a chat up so we can see prompts, and she just texted something that says hot seat. And I am very concerned right now.
Well, it's all about the transition then, you know, when you talk about questions that make people think. Sometimes we have these things called hot seat questions. They really bring everything back together. And you know, it's a great thing that I said, I want to reiterate, just take a breath. And if someone asks the right question, it really puts you in that mindset. You're like, well, wait a minute, maybe this isn't all just about them. And if it is, we need to have that conversation. So a question in the right appropriate time, like a hot seat question, can really make a valid point. Right, Janelle?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've started asking the same question, actually. Like, we used to make them super random. Now we're coming back to the same ones because we've like want to kind of see the pattern from our different guests and what they say. So
data gathering, I love it.
Yes, exactly. All right. So first question is, just if you had to pick one, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the fire service today?
Why are we doing the job? I think when I came on the job, it was blue collar as heck. It was guys driving old trucks who just wanted to go to jobs, wanted to run calls, and that is why they were there. And they were getting paid not much to do it, or giving up a lot of time as volunteers. sacrificing a lot of social time, family time. There was sacrifice there, both on the career and the volunteer side. And then we made it a very white collar job. And if people were getting paid well, benefits, retirement, all those things. I mean, we're never going to be where we should be with those things, but it was way better. And I think recruitment started to exploit that a little bit. And so we got a generation of people who weren't necessarily doing that. So I think what the modern fire service needs to ask itself is, when we recruit people, why are they here? And the people on the job need to be asking themselves that. Why are we here? Why did I sign up for this job? Because we did get away from the meaning of the job. We need to get back to it, which is harder with the new generation, right? Because I can go on YouTube if I'm an 18-year-old and play games and make $1 million. So reiterating just the absolute beauty that is this job and serving other human beings, I think that's the biggest thing that the fire service needs to take head on right now. Because I think when you take that on, a lot of the other things can start to fall into place.
Well, speaking of identity, we all have challenges, personal challenges. What's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome personally?
Recently.
All right. Janelle was like, we are not taking that one back to the early 2000s.
I want to go there, but you know.
The biggest challenge recently is getting older and realizing where the wise line of injuries and suck it up buttercup, and your body is not in the same place as it used to be. Where that line of physical resiliency, am I becoming bratty in my older age with more aches and pains, or do I need to stop and do I need to do the right thing for me and my crew? Is this an actual injury or injury about to happen? That's been really hard to have, because back to ego, I could do things in my early 20s, not sleep for 5 days, PT as hard as I wanted to, and be just fine and eat horribly. And now if I sleep wrong, you know, my world is falling apart and I need to go get physical therapy. It's just finding out where that line of responsibility is and killing the ego and realizing, hey, you're almost at the 20-year mark. Your body's going to handle things differently. It's okay to admit that you're falling apart. Take a knee, address this, because when I haven't addressed things, that's when massive injuries have begun to happen. That's been a hard conversation to have with myself.
All right, Stephanie, who has had the biggest influence in your life in terms of your fire service career?
We already threw Rocco under the bus enough, so we're not going to give him that one. We already gave him that one. It was actually an entire shift. Back in 2007, I dealt with a shift leader who just was not a good person, and they treated a lot of people around them pretty horribly. And at one point, I became the subject of that. And I talk about this frequently when talking about how to handle discrimination. And just to watch a shift full of dudes bond together when they did not have to. These guys owed me nothing. I was a brand new person on their shift. They didn't know me from Adam, and just watching them step up and do the right thing, even though it put them in a hot seat and put them under a French fry light and made them targets. Those guys will always be my heroes for doing that. They had the biggest influence on my career, because that could have easily put me into a very dark place. I could have quit the fire service. And it taught me so much about leadership, even though none of them are officers, the typical version of leadership we think of, the self-leadership they displayed, the selflessness, the crew continuity, every buzzword you can think of, they displayed. And that was the biggest impact that will ever have happened to my career.
That's great.
Yeah, thank God they did that. Because look at how many other things and people you're influencing because of their actions. So, you know, I love the fact you said you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have bugles or brass or white shirt or whatever to be a leader and to make a positive impact. And, you know, speaking of that, this podcast is about being better. And hopefully listeners have taken quite a few lessons and anecdotes and ideas from this and from you. And thank you for all that and all your input. But, you know, final question is, how are you working to get better?
I think this is a season of life for me where I'm trying to, two things, shut up and listen, which is something we all struggle with in fire service, specifically as type A people. Big struggle for me is remembering that there is still a ton to learn out in the world and in the fire service and from people around me. So being more mindful of that. And the other thing is learning to say no, because I think we get to a certain point where we're the helpers and we're the doers and sure, another project, and realizing that if we take on too much, then we don't have the mental ability to be the way we need to be with citizens on the calls because we're already mentally tapped out doing all kinds of projects. And B, we're not going to be giving those projects the time that they deserve. So learning to have self-discipline in both those categories has been the focus of this past 6 months. Have not been exceeding in any way, shape, or form at them, but trying.
Use this as a motivator for you. So when you go back and listen to this, you're like, I did say that. I'm going to try to do that. You know, I'm going to try to
publicly admit that.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm going to create show t-shirts that say work in progress, because we all are. And there's good days and there's bad days, but we constantly just try to do what you were saying. If we, you know, evaluate where we are, just try to improve on that a little bit, you know, every single day. If everybody in the fire service did that, man, oh man, we can make a great improvement. So Stephanie White, thank you so much for all of your insights. Good luck with your presentations at FDIC. You can also listen to her at 5 After Midnight podcast, see her around not only FDIC, but a lot of different conferences around the country. Great insight, great stories. If you are listening to this podcast, by the way, I want to, first of all, thank you for joining us, but you can see us in action. You can see Stephanie. You can see the hair color that we were referencing earlier on in the podcast, of course. You can watch us on our YouTube page. You can go to firerescue1.com and click on the Better Every Shift tab. We hope that you would review the show and, of course, share the show with your crew members and other people that you would find that, you know, you want them to improve along with you. As Stephanie White said, listen more. Be human. Don't be afraid of the crucial conversations. Take time for yourself, take time to develop, but most importantly, learn something, do something, and share something to make you and those around you better every shift. Thanks for listening, everybody.